to MBA Podcaster, the only broadcast source for cutting-edge information and advice on the MBA application process. I'm Joanne Griffith. Now, no two people who apply for an MBA are alike, so everyone going through the process has questions like, when is the best time to apply? Who should write my letter of recommendation? Can I get away with having a low GPA if my GMAT score is good? And vice versa? Well, this week we're at Manhattan GMAT's headquarters with admissions consultant Jeremy Scheinwald from MBA Mission. They hosted an admissions panel to address many of these questions and others. The discussion also focused on the concerns of international applicants, prospective candidates with GMAT verbal and quant issues, and the thoughts of applicants from quote-unquote typical backgrounds in investment banking. But before the panel got underway, Jeremy Scheinwald drew attention to a situation that is affecting almost everyone in some way, shape or form, the economy. Now, of course, business schools aren't immune from the economic downturn, and many schools are now seeing a drop in applications from the boom time numbers they've experienced for many years. One reason for the decrease revolves around international students. Loans to overseas applicants traditionally made through Citigroup are now much harder to secure as a result of the mortgage crisis. Well, after speaking with admissions officers across the country, Jeremy says that most are expecting to see even further drops in applications. So now, he says, may be a good time to apply while the pool is a little smaller than usual and the competition not quite so tough.
I think that this year we'll see moderate decreases in the number of applicants that are out there. And in my opinion, that means it's a good time to apply. I'm not an economist. I can't tell you what the job market will be like in 3 years when you're graduating from school. But to me, if you're applying when the quality of the pool is diminishing, that's a great time to be applying.
So some good news for prospective candidates, but concern over the impact of the economy is where the admissions panel opened with the first case study, Antonio. Now, he moved from Italy as a youngster, studied at NYU Stern, graduated with a 3.7 GPA and scored a 700 in his GMAT. So far, so good. He was in the analyst program at a leading bank for 2 years before, like so many in banking, being laid off. Antonio asked Jeremy Scheinwald about the impact of what he called the employment gap on his business school application.
From personal conversations that I've had with admissions officers, they certainly understand that the global financial crisis does not lay at the feet of, you know, the responsibility for it, and your layoff does not lay at your own feet right now. And if they weren't prepared to take on any clients, any students right now who had been laid off, their classes would be quite small. So I guess the question really becomes more of, what have you done with your time? You know, why don't you give us a little bit of background there?
Well, I have some friends who were starting a startup, and so I did some work with them. They had no background in finance at all, so I worked with them on how to put together pro formas, income projections, and balance sheet projections, and so forth. And so I did some work that way. I also studied for the GMAT. I took a lot of time of those 4 months, and so that came out from that. And I also got involved in MoMA, in the Museum of Modern Art, in the Young Friends of that. So I've been doing what I can there. And actually, they asked me to join the board. I'm treasurer, along with a number of other people who have been laid off. So, you know, we sort of commiserate. But so I've been doing that. But I wonder, like, you know, that's what admissions committees are going to see and say to themselves, you know, you just did that because, you know, you're just trying to pack your resume. You were just, you know, you had a bunch of time, so you were bored. You just, you know, or any of those.
Well, I mean, I think, what are you, you know, to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, what are you going to do? Are you not going to take on this community activity just because you're concerned that someone else might be cynical about it? I mean, were you interested? Were you doing it? It sounded, I mean, you said you were involved as an undergrad.
Not a major, but I did, like, minor in it and courses and things. And
right. So if anything, maybe the investment stint is the anomaly, and you've been quite involved on opposite ends of your professional experience, and mm-hmm. you're mm-hmm. picking up maybe where you left off.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah. So I think you don't really need to make any apologies for doing community service, and it sounds like you've got some leadership there. It's not like you were just a passenger. You were out there. You said you became treasurer.
Yeah, yeah. It's, again, the, you know, finance background or whatever. I figured that would
right.
be the right thing.
Right. Okay. Well, I think that's great. I think you've done quite a lot with your time off, and I think it helps build your profile. You know, you're not, you know, it's unfortunate that you lost your job. There's no question, but you can recover from that, and you're not just, you know, you're not just a banker, in, you know, in quotes for those who are listening on the radio, just right. a banker in quotes. But I think a lot of people have that concern, and it seems like you've got some other dimensions there.
Now, away from the economy, one of the concerns that came up again and again with the case studies on the admissions panel is the GMAT. Later, we'll hear from international student Mikhail, who struggled with the verbal component of the GMAT. But first, let's get some background on the next case study.
I'm Jennifer. I graduated from Smith College about 4 years ago. I got a 3.75 while I was there. I've currently, for the past 4 years, been working for a major consumer products company, and I've actually received one promotion while I've been there. I got a 740 on the GMAT. You can see the breakdown. I did a bit better on the verbal than I did on the quant. I'm looking at Kellogg, Wharton, and Texas, and I'm from Texas, and I'm actually maybe interested in going back there. I'm interested in high-tech marketing as opposed to traditional consumer packaged goods marketing.
Jennifer went on to share her concern about not doing as well on the quantitative portion of the GMAT and wanted to find out how best to demonstrate her quant skills on her application.
The school's going to want to know that you have certain quantitative competencies. I guess, I mean, marketing is becoming a more and more quantitatively oriented field. If this is what I understand from my own candidates, with the, you know, the internet giving you so much data, you know, is your work quantitative?
Well, I guess, you know, it's interesting that you say that, because actually a lot of what we do is, you know, looking at numbers, running ROI analyses on our ads, trying to figure out what the best, you know, media is for us in terms of where we're getting the best bang for our dollar, in terms of where we're spending. So a lot of it, even just looking at weekly sales statistics, you know, so it's not complicated spreadsheets like, you know, an investment banker, but certainly you need to be proficient in quantitative abilities to really succeed at my company.
And you have been succeeding because you've got a promotion.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I guess now that you say it, one of the credentials for me to be given that promotion certainly was to be able to show proficiency with respect to understanding our business trends and analyzing the numbers. So,
right. So, I mean, that would play into proving your quantitative side. If you're like, I think the fact that you're not working on spreadsheets all day doesn't matter. You know, are there any, you know, specifics maybe that you know, any anecdotes that you can offer in terms of your quantitative skills, you know, at all?
Well, you know, it's such a big company, so I guess this didn't seem like maybe that big of a deal at the time, but actually we were kind of looking at the effectiveness of some of our ads and the timing of them, and I kind of noticed certain trends within the numbers, and we altered the timing of when we delivered some ads, and we actually, you know, I guess in Q2 saved about $250,000,
right,
which is really kind of a rounding error, but...
Right. Well, you know, the dollar value doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that you know, I know it's a multi-billion-dollar firm and $250,000 seems insignificant, but it's the spirit of what you did. And again, you know, we talked before about the optional essay. This might be the beginning. You know, you've got a promotion because of your analytical skills. You've got this win here in this $250,000 savings. This might be a story that you can tell to the admissions committee about having quantitative competencies. The other thing, of course, is it's still early in the year. It might be time. I don't know what your schedule is like. It might be time to take a summer class or two in accounting, finance, economics, maybe even statistics or calculus, so that you can prove your quantitative abilities. Is that something you think you might have time for? Because if it is, I would certainly recommend, I mean, don't take that class if you don't have time and you're going to get a B- or a C. But if it's something you feel like you can commit yourself to over the summer, maybe the hours are slow, you can, and you earn an A in that, that will really help bolster your argument as well.
Now, Jennifer isn't the only one with GMAT worries. Mikhail, an economics major from Russia who we mentioned earlier, has taken the GMAT 3 times and achieved a 680. He scored 4.5 on the essay, putting him in the 55th percentile. But Mikhail says his downfall is the language component. He was in the 64th percentile for the verbal, even though his spoken English is excellent. Should Mikhail take the test again? And what can he do to illustrate his language skills on his application? Here's Jeremy Scheinwald again.
GMAT is not everything. It's one of many components. If you can't improve, let it go. There's no point in taking that test over and over and over again. One thing I will say is that if you don't do well on the test, the admissions committee is going to want to see you take the test twice. It's a myth that they only want you taking it once. They're going to want to see you try again. They want to know that you at least put some effort into it. And so our friend Mikhail, taking it three times, having the same score twice, he sent the message that he's done everything he can, and it's time to move on. And again, you know, just explaining his weaknesses via the optional essay. You know, he isn't struggling to read the questions. He's entirely conversant. It's nothing that he his English language skills are not an issue, and he can explain that.
Talking of applications, how many is too many? Mikhail says he plans to apply to 10 schools.
Fewer applications done very, very well will benefit you, not more applications done poorly. And you don't have to determine the number you're going to do today, although I would say applying to 7 to 10 schools, 7 in the first round and 10 overall would be the most that I've ever seen. If you can hypothetically get it done incredibly well, then more power to you if you actually do want to attend one of these 10 institutions. But I think what's more likely is that you would start applying and do a few well, and then determine at some point whether you want to keep adding schools if you feel that you have the time to do a high-quality job. And we tend to advise candidates to apply to between 4 and 6 schools if they're conservative applicants. Anything beyond that, if you're not going to get into your sixth school, you're probably not going to get into your 7th school. You're probably doing something wrong.
So less is more when it comes to applications. As an international student, in this case from Russia, Mikhail also discussed his worry that admissions committees may not be too familiar with his undergraduate institution, even though it's well known and respected back in his homeland. Mikhail also highlighted that, as a foreign candidate, he had no alumni connections with some of the business schools he planned to apply to, putting him, in his view, at a disadvantage. Jeremy addressed both of these concerns.
Undergraduate performance is more important than undergraduate institution. Absolutely. The trajectory of your grades, the kind of classes you've taken, the stresses of those classes, you know, how difficult they are. The schools read your transcripts. Most of them will say they read your transcripts, you know, course by course. And so, worry more about your grades instead of the institution. If anything, if they don't have someone from your institution or your country, that's generally a positive. You do not need alumni connections to succeed. And in fact, this year, Harvard Business School actually asked their alumni to stop sending in supplementary letters of recommendation because they were just getting so many, and so many alumni wanted to have influence, and they couldn't. All they were doing was alienating their own alumni by not responding to them and letting it, not responding via admissions. So you don't need to have alumni connections to get into these schools. And again, the schools want to have some diversity. They don't want to have, 800 identical people in their classroom.
Whether you're an international or a domestic student embarking on an MBA, you will have to decide where you'd like to study. Would you like to stay close to home? Do you prefer a small or a large school? Here are some of the thoughts on this raised by marketing professional Jennifer.
I want to go to a school that's really high ranked. I also have a marketing background, so schools like Kellogg and Wharton just come to mind. I mentioned I'm from Texas, and high-tech marketing, Dell really stands out to me as a potential place that may be ideal for me to work one day. Going back home would be really interesting, but I really want to go to a high-ranked school, and, Kellogg and Wharton have such marketing backgrounds. Just based on my background, it seems like I could be a fit there. I don't know what you think about that. I mean, I've also, I realize that general management might be something, an area where I could probably get, a broader set of skills as opposed to just marketing.
Right, right. I guess there are a few things there. With respect to rankings come and go. And, right now, Yale, I believe, is ranked, I could be wrong here, but I think it's ranked number 6 on U.S. News and isn't ranked in the top 20 in Business Week, and it kind of shows you how absurd rankings are. And if you look at Chicago, was ranked number 10 one year, and then it was ranked number 2 the next year, and then number 1 the year after that a couple of years ago. And the idea that not much changed at the school during those 2 years to suddenly jump 8 spots—it takes so long to change an institution. So much of the institution isn't moving. The alumni network is the same. The professors are broadly the same. So I think basing things on rankings is a recipe for disappointments. In many ways, if you really want to base your decisions on rankings, you should be guessing as to where the rankings are going, not where they are. You know, and the other thing is, you know, you're talking about high-tech marketing in Texas, and you know, if you want to do that, I mean, it's, you know, I'm not saying you should completely eschew Kellogg and Wharton, which are excellent schools, but you know, here's a school that has 240 people, where Dell, Microsoft, and Apple all recruit, and they recruit, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, about 15% of the class, I think, and in good years when Dell is really chugging a lot more. And so, you know, if you have a demographic interest like that, you may want to give it some thought. Texas should certainly stay on your list. If your GMAT score is way above their average, you've got a promotion at a major marketing firm, your grades are great, you know, this is the beginning of a good story there. In terms of the other schools, I guess maybe we can dig in a little bit here. So you're really passionate about the marketing, but you also said something about general management and...
Yeah, I mean, I guess in some ways I kind of want to round out, you know, my skill set a bit, but I guess those schools just came to mind because I have been in marketing and they're known for their marketing programs. You know,
is the idea to study marketing at those schools? Is that?
Well, I definitely would look to get a broader based, you know, general management education as well. And I guess the other thing I didn't mention is, you know, I went to Smith. It's pretty small. I really enjoyed the small atmosphere. So I don't know, maybe Wharton's actually too big for me.
Right. Well, if you enjoyed small schools, Wharton is the second biggest school at over 800 students. So it might not be, you know, might not be the most intimate environment for you. And if you're, you know, you're looking for general management programs. I mean, both Kellogg and Wharton can provide you with a strong general management program, but there are a variety of small general management programs that dot the East Coast. You know, Darden, if you're interested in the case method, Tuck, you know, Duke, those are all on the smaller side of the schools. You know, Cornell, those are all small schools that might be a better emotional fit for you, if you can say with some determination that you're not interested in big schools. Kellogg is definitely, you know, at 480 students or so, is definitely you know, and it's in Evanston, which maybe isn't, which gives you a little bit more of an intimate setting than other big city schools like an NYU. So you know, that might be a decent choice for you, but I would probably question that choice of Wharton, to be honest.
So you sort out the GMAT, make the most of losing your job before applying to business school, and choose where to apply. But what if you decide to take your career in a whole new direction? Here's case study Antonio.
Well, I wonder about the banker thing, right? Because I actually don't want to go back and be a banker, but I wonder if that's, you know, that's my background. Is it better to just say, like, I want to go be a banker again and just tell the committee that? Or, I mean, what I want to do is something different. So I don't know which way I should play it. Should I just say, yes, I want to be a banker? And
well, I think that, you know, there's certainly an appeal to a conservative job path. It's definitely tough to switch careers in this kind of economy. And I think that, you know, the admissions office is more and more often consulting the career services office when they're looking at candidates these days. The question really is, how plausible is your shift? Is it something that's wild and fanciful, or is it something that is that you have transferable skills for, and that you can actually, you know, you can find your niche in that area?
Well, I just want to be a dancer. No, I want to this restructuring stuff that we did. I want to be. It sounds weird, but I want to be involved in companies that are undergoing restructuring, that are undergoing bankruptcy. But more from like the corporate strategy on the inside. Like, I'd love to work for. It sounds weird, but I'd love to work for GM right now because they're going through such massive shifts. And, you know, so I was sort of involved from the outside, just the finance side before, but I'd like to be on the inside, like making the operational decisions that I would see happening from the outside.
And to that, I would say to you that you need to show, it sounds like you've got transferable skills there, so that's great. You need to show that it's a reasonable choice for you, that this isn't just something that you're whimsically approaching, that it's something that you've really done your homework and that you understand that this is possible. Is this a naive daydream? I don't mean to put you down.
No.
Or have you done some...
Yeah, no, I mean, it started when maybe my first project, our first deal, I was looking and saying, okay, this is cool to run these numbers, but wow, to be my client, to be the person on the inside who has to then try to make this work. So, I've been thinking about it for 2 years prior to my layoff. And during that time, I mean, I have, friends at other places who are involved more operationally, even, a couple of friends in the government who are, on the bailout side of things. So, I've talked to people who, work at in various kinds of funds and so forth, and also within companies that are undergoing these kinds of restructurings.
Right. Well, so this is a story that you need to tell. You need to tell your story in a complete way if you're looking at going to, going to a higher risk job. And I think that the other thing you can do, and this is something that several, I mentioned before, the AI conference, there were several admissions officers who said they'd be very much open to, and it's not necessarily wishy-washy, to people having primary and secondary goals this year, and saying that you have this ambitious goal and it relates to your field, that you've been in the past, but that you also recognize, even with your connections in that field, that it's still, you don't know what's going to happen in 2 or 3 years. These firms might disappear, they might not, who knows. They're risky jobs to get, but you have another rational backup plan. And it's not that your plan is irrational, but maybe a one that's maybe a little more conservative. And as long as you express those in a profound way, I think that you would have the opportunity to differentiate yourself from many other bankers who are taking that conservative path, or in fact, that's what they want to do. And you would have the opportunity to really shine and wrap yourself in the flag, and I think it'd be a good story for you.
One theme that appears again and again throughout the 90-minute discussion is international experience and language skills. Now, Antonio is fluent in Italian and also taught himself French, which Jeremy Scheinwald says is a bonus for companies looking for diversity in their workforce without high risk. But not everyone is as fortunate, says Jennifer.
The other thing I have thought about and I wanted to ask you, so I know a lot of people talk now about having international experience or, speaking a second language, and I don't really have any of that. I've never lived abroad, I've never worked abroad, and so I just wonder how big of an issue that is in my application.
Well, there are very, very few things where schools have a tick box or a cutoff. People always ask, what's the GMAT cutoff for your school whenever I'm around admissions officers? And the schools say there is no cutoff. And it's the same thing. I think a lot of people worry they don't have international experience, and that's going to immediately prevent them from going to business school. It's something that it's a great bonus to have, especially if you have something interesting. But just living abroad doesn't necessarily mean that you have an international experience. There are lots of people who go abroad for school and spend their entire time with their American friends and barely experience the other culture. So the quality of your experience is what's really important. The other thing I would say is these days you can be embracing the world from your own backyard. Manhattan GMAT, well, recently having opened offices in Toronto and Montreal, before that was still an international company because they have clients from around the world and even instructors around the world who are working here, and they're doing online lessons around the world, etc. So, at your firm, have you engaged any internationals at all on any projects? Are you working with the Tokyo office on X or the Sao Paulo office on Y?
Well, actually, I did work on the launch of a new yogurt drink, and it was being launched here in the States as well as in Europe. And it was interesting because the teams worked together, but we kind of customized our marketing campaigns based on the target audience. And so here in the U.S., it was really flashy. We had celebrities, and then actually in Europe, that target customer much tended to just be a much more low-key campaign that they use. So, but we collaborated a lot and then kind of tailored our program. So I don't know, that might be an interesting...
Yeah, I mean, it sounds to me like that's certainly international. You didn't have to be physically in Europe to make that an international experience. You clearly had some takeaways, like the ones you just offered about the differences in cultures, and you worked with those people to launch a product. There's a product launch. So I think that's great, and I don't think you really have anything to worry about. And that might be one of your best stories. It might be a bullet point on your resume, but I don't think anyone's gonna say, you know, this woman does not have international experience.
A lot of questions and a lot of advice shared over 90 minutes, but here are just some of the key points to remember, starting with GMAT scores.
So low quant GMAT score is not necessarily a killer, and I think a lot of people really freak out if they don't have scores that are above the 80th percentile. But you have to be prepared to try to reveal the competencies in other areas.
Next up, international experience.
International experience is not based on traveling to foreign countries, and it's not a tick box. You don't need to have formal international experience. It helps, but you can find other ways to showcase it. It's just not a deal breaker.
Changing career.
A lot of people are still seeking to change career paths, and it's not the kiss of death. But the schools really want to believe that you can achieve what you're setting out to achieve. And so you can't just say, you know, I've been in marketing, now I want to go into consulting. It's not going to work.
And finally, application individuality.
Pandering to an admissions committee is always a bad idea. It results in applications that are very, very generic. And so, you know, you really shouldn't try to become something. You should be who you are and try and stake out your own real estate instead of trying to, you know, get a little piece of that real estate that everyone is going after. It kind of makes sense that way. Instead of trying to be generic, try to be your own candidate.
That was Jeremy Scheinwald, admissions consultant with MBA Mission, speaking at an admissions panel held at Manhattan GMAT's headquarters. For more information, a transcript of this show, or to register for your bi-weekly MBA podcast, visit mbapodcaster.com. Look for us on Twitter and Facebook to get the latest news and insight in the world of business school. This is MBA Podcaster. I'm Joanne Griffith. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned next time when we explore another topic of interest in your quest for an MBA.